right, welcome back to the Hall Pass Podcast. This is our season 2, episode 5. Today we're going to be discussing the athletic recruitment process. It might not be something that a lot of you guys have thought about before, so I think it's really interesting for us to talk about it. So if you're an athlete or you have students or children who are athletes, listen up so we can give you some inside scoop on how to be a student athlete in college. So who are the key players in the athletic recruitment process? The student athlete, obviously, your parents, your counselors, and your coaches. We're going to talk about, you know, what type of coaches and who to talk to in regards to your recruitment process. But this is just the key players that are going to be very, very important in your athletic recruitment process. General things that you should do first as a potential student athlete: find your academic fit. So you need to talk to your counselor, your college counselor. It's always going to be a first priority at whatever college that you're going to apply to or wherever you want to get recruited. You want to make sure that you're academically fit for that school. You want to also check your athletic fit. So you want to talk to your coach, your high school coach, your club coach, etc., and just kind of figuring out, do I fit athletically in terms of my potential to go to this college? And then check out the rest of the things that you might need to know, such as the size of the school, the location, the student body, your major academic interest. Those all should play a part of where you want to get recruited for college. All right, welcome back, boys.
Hello.
What's going on?
Hey.
So we're still missing Richard. He's still in Korea on a business trip, but we have our other three boys here with us today. So boys, have you guys played sports in high school? Tell me your experiences about that, and you know, did you have dreams of being recruited, and how does that go?
I know Jay wanted to be a foot taller.
That's wow. I'll start by saying I did wrestling and I did volleyball.
I know that about you.
Setting my hands were delicate, I suppose, and I was also the
how tall
libero.
Do you have to be to play volleyball?
Jeez. Liberos can be, you know, in high school, because we weren't, you know, division like CIF contenders or anything like that, you could a libero, actually, you don't need to be that tall because you're the one
What's
in the
libero?
Back. Libero is someone in the back who digs the spikes.
Oh.
So the opposing team
so
hits.
So let's ask the professional volleyball player in the room.
Yeah.
Travis, can Jay play volleyball?
As a libero, you probably could. You're right. You don't have to be that tall as a libero just because you're a defensive specialist. You're stuck to the back row, so you literally are not allowed to be at the net with the tall people.
Right.
they say no. No, you cannot pass this line.
There's a 10-foot line that you literally can't cross.
Right.
So it's kind of like a 5-foot point guard in the NBA, like Muggsy Bogues.
Pretty
like
much.
Spud
yeah.
Webb.
He's your Nate Robinson.
Well, Nate Robinson, but, you know, my experience with sports was that all I remember is it was time consuming. Took too much time. Came home tired. I had like 5 APs, homework assignments to do. It was really rough. So I give a tremendous amount of respect for anyone who can balance both an academic rigor that is expected typically of Asian Americans aiming for top 25 schools alongside taking a varsity sport. My only notion of this, I want to be first fully blunt with you guys, I'm probably going to be asking the most amount of questions about this, but for me it's I see over the past 8 years I've done professional educational consulting that those who do a varsity sport tend to have a very higher chance, like a much higher chance of getting accepted to top 10 schools, especially at Ivy Leagues. Mm-hmm. So that's my notion of it. I know there's Division 1, 2, and 3, and there's all different kinds of sports. I'd be interested to see how the rest of us kind of fill in the gaps of my knowledge regarding this.
I want to hear Travis on this too, but you know, I'm very similar. I love sports. I love playing sports. I happen to be of Indian descent, so I'm not very athletic. I mean, in my genes. So, there's no D1 cricket or sports like that in America. So, no, but I played like sports and intramural sports, and yeah, even in college, never was recruited, of course, but it would have been nice to be. I mean, I played baseball, basketball, soccer, but never at the highly competitive level.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to hear some of these topics today, because I'm very curious, because my kids being Punjabi, Filipino, Punjapinos, I'm hoping they may have the athletic gene to see if they can go far.
The Filipino side will give that to them?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up in a house of athletes. My dad played quarterback in college, and my mom played volleyball for a little bit until her knees were shot. So we were just pretty much raised on just sports, pretty much. So, of course, you know, I wanted to be the next Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. So for a while, basketball was my favorite, but I ended up, the only really recruitment that I got at a high school was for golf, which was lightly recruited by like some small D3s. And I knew I wanted to go to a bigger school and study journalism, and that, you know, I wasn't going to go to the PGA Tour. So I didn't want to waste an awesome opportunity to go to Maryland and study journalism. But athletics, I think, are just so important for high school athletes to do. Because like Jay said, I mean, it looks awesome on a resume because you have so many opportunities to be a leader. You know, I had 3 leadership positions just by being on a sports team, by being captain 2 years for golf, and once sort of I put on my resume I was captain for basketball because I got to be captain for a game. Wasn't lying. So you get these leadership positions and you know, this teamwork ability to collaborate in a group, that it's awesome whether you get recruited or not.
Yeah.
So just a quick follow-up on that real quick. Sorry, Jenny. Mm-hmm. So being recruited for D3's golf, were you the best golfer on your high school team?
So our golf team was ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. And I was named our MVP my senior year, but I don't think I was our best player. Mm-hmm. We had a couple other kids who actually are the other 3 kids. So with golf, we started 4 guys for the state tournament, and I was one of the 4. The other 3 went on to play golf in college, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. But so I was one of our best players, and we won 48 straight matches from my sophomore year to senior year. So we were really good. Mm-hmm. But I think the other guys were actually better.
I think also Travis's kind of perspective on athletic recruitment is interesting, because as a journalist, he's had to cover high school athletes and college athletes. And, you know, and I think that that's kind of given you an inside scoop on how, you know, they go in D1 schools and things like that.
Recruiting is crazy, and we'll get into it. But Jen, you were also recruited
High school. I, unlike the boys here sitting at this table, played soccer, you know, pretty much my entire life. I, you know, love soccer. Didn't really think in middle school or even high school, like my freshman or sophomore year, that I would even potentially think about getting recruited. Honestly, I didn't think that recruitment was something that I was even fathoming for a little while. But my high school soccer team played, and our varsity team was incredible. We won 3 CIF championships my 4 years that I was in high school.
Wow.
And nice. They were, you know, incredible. Our entire starting lineup was recruited to a D1 or D2 soccer team, which is very hard to say. You can't go to high school and say, oh, their entire starting lineup, you know, went to a D1 or D2 school. So I've experienced recruitment myself. You know, UCLA was one of the schools. I went to UCLA, and it was one of the schools that looked at me for recruitment as well. And my experiences at UCLA playing soccer and things like that. So I'll definitely get into my personal experiences and how I experienced and explored recruitment. But as a girls soccer player, I think it's very different than a male athlete as well, especially when it comes to sports like basketball or football, that is a little bit larger in terms of recruitment. And even rowing is huge in the East Coast in terms of recruitment, as well as lacrosse. So soccer, especially women's soccer, not being as popular per se in terms of recruitment, I think you know, you still have to be really, really great and amazing to play at D1, but I think it's in comparison to some of these male athletes in sports is very different.
Threshold might be a little lower.
Exactly. Okay, so now that you know a little bit of background on us, obviously we have 4 amazing athletes here: wrestling, volleyball, frisbee, soccer,
cricket,
ultimate frisbee, you know, things like that. So let's go into the recruitment process a little bit. How does the recruitment process work, Travis?
I'm going to try to keep it sort of like recruiting 101. So if I get kind of too in detail or jargony, just yell at me. Mm-hmm. So with recruiting, I mean, like anything in academics or just in the real world, it's constantly changing how it works. So, you know, when me and Jenny were coming up, the recruiting happened almost exclusively during the high school season.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, you know, with the advent of clubs and amateur athletic union and everything going in the summer, that's where a lot of the recruitment takes place. But typically it will begin essentially as early as you begin to show talent in something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a 6'9" eighth grader, basketball teams are going to be giving you calls. I mean, that's
right.
Just kind of the way it goes.
Right.
But generally, you know, you can get recruited as early as eighth grade. I mean, there are eighth graders with scholarship offers.
Wow.
And coaches, as soon as they identify you as a talent, they'll, you know, make a note of you, and they will stay in touch with you. And as you get better, more and more coaches will be sending you letters and giving you calls and saying, and so they can visit you and watch your games. There are certain periods where they can and cannot actually talk to you, which to get into the details would get super complicated. And that's why a lot of schools go on probation for recruiting violations, for talking to athletes when they're not allowed to.
Yeah.
But generally, they can email you, give you phone calls, go watch your games when they are allowed to. And if you are an athlete and you're good enough, you will be getting – coaches will be getting in touch with you.
Yeah.
Your talent will stand out.
You can't get anything official until you hit your senior year, but – but like Travis said, you can people can talk to you and offer whatever there is that they can offer.
The car.
Again, nothing.
We always hear the stories about like Reggie Bush.
Right.
And,
nothing official can happen, and that's why these recruitment athletic directors go on probation because they are doing things that they're not supposed to.
So you got like in. So let's go back to that scenario. You got that 6'8" eighth grader. Yeah. So. Just by being 6'8", putting on Facebook and Twitter, look at the size of me. That's a fine. Like, how do they do it? You have to join like a high school sport, or do you do like? I know when I was doing volleyball, they had like Balboa Bay Club and things like that. And occasionally there'd be recruiters that would play with us actually there, or if they were like ex players.
Right.
Is it mainly going through the high school sport route, or
so the most recruiting these days takes place in the summer during. So for basketball. What's known as AAU, which stands for Amateur Athletic Union. That is their summer circuit. And the reason why it's become so big is because the college coaches are off. They're not in season. They can actually go and travel and see you play. So I used to cover AAU basketball in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, which is a hotbed for basketball. And at any given tournament, I'd see 40 Division I coaches just sitting there watching. Mm-hmm. Right. Half the time, they wouldn't even be allowed to talk to the kids.
Yeah.
But they'd wave and say, hey, I'm here to watch you. Right? So they would know. And that's so the most recruiting these days takes place outside of high school season. So club seasons, during camps. So like Yale will have a soccer camp. Mm-hmm. So if you want your kid to play soccer at Yale, send them to the Yale soccer camp. That's where you can meet the coaches. That's where recruiting is legal. And guess what? The coaches love it because they're also making money off of entry fees for that. And they don't have to go anywhere to recruit. Mm-hmm. They bring their recruitment to them.
So there's summer programs that colleges themselves you could try to apply for as a high school student.
Yeah. And they are becoming
Summer camps. Summer you camps. Don't have to apply for them. You just kind of pay the money and the entry fee and you go. Mm. And then there are AAUs. And then for soccer, there's like club soccer. So this is for mostly like team sports. We'll kind of get into individual sports. Like swim is very different. So swim, you should do club swim, but the way that you're going to get noticed more so for swim is by shortening your time. So the more the higher you are nationally ranked in terms of your time or state ranked for your time, the better chances you have of being noticed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so team sports and individual sports can be a little bit different as well.
Okay, so in a sense, you want to either go to camps to be noticed, or you want to win or produce some sort of a record of some kind, something that's eligible. So I know that CIF is a contender for that. AAU is brand new to me. Let's say I'm a parent and I'm determined to get my son or daughter in with a sports scholarship, don't want to pay the tuition, you know? And so where do I go to learn about AAU or all these different kind of organizations? Is it different for each sport, I'm assuming?
A little bit different for each sport, yeah. Okay. So for basketball, the high school coach will probably know the local AAU teams in the area.
So the resource would be talk to the high school coach.
The high school coach or other parents too. Parents are probably your best friends because parents, as someone who's covered high school sports for 10 years now, high school parents are incredibly resourceful. Yeah. They know everything there is to know and all the people they need to know. And I did a huge sort of investigative story. It was about 10,000 words on how much money parents are spending on getting their kids recruited.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost evens out. So if a parent will spend about, $60,000 or $70,000 on their youth athletics.
Right.
Which you just paid for your scholarship, so you sort of reverse it anyway.
Yeah.
It's, sending your kids all these camps and all these teams and getting them the best equipment and whatnot. Getting your kid recruited is wildly expensive.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Yep. Is AAU kind of like club basketball?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's exactly what
got
it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So like club soccer, but club basketball.
Okay,
I think I agree with the parents thing. You know, the way that my mom found out that soccer was like a big contender for women's sports and decided that I should quit Taekwondo and do soccer instead.
Good decision, Mom.
was from my mom talking to other parents, really. And that's what it came down to. So talking to other parents. I mean, high school coaches probably do know about AAU and club sports outside of their high school. But really the best. You know, Punkage, when you told me that, you know, one of your student, I mean, not your students, your daughter was recruited for club. Basically, she played soccer and then you get recruited. Coaches will come, like you get recruited. We're not even talking about college. Like you get recruited at a young age and they're like, oh, I want you to play on my spring team.
As soon as you pull on a uniform, the recruitment begins.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, okay, come to the spring team. Then the club coaches come to see talent on the spring team. And then the club coaches are like, hey, I want. So when you are talented, people come and watch you. I don't think it's a matter of like, you know, I think it's important to talk to parents and seek out AAU and club soccer. But the ways in which I fell into club soccer was because people asked me to join their level of competition, right?
Okay, so you brought up something interesting from my end because I'm trying to approach this as from like what I think I would ask as a parent, which is 60 grand. So you've seen some parents easily. And families spend up to that much. I find that there's two parallels then, because like in one end, you can invest in the education, and that's what you see a lot of Southern California Asian Americans do. And 60 grand is kind of on the high end when you think about like SAT class, like 1500 for the summer boot camp, things like that. But like, what are we talking about here? 60 is the super high end. What am I expecting for, let's say, going to Yale's soccer camp? How much would that cost us?
So it kind of depends on the camp. You know, if you send your kid to one of the higher end camps, I mean, that could be $2,500 because you're paying for, you know, you're paying for coaching, for board, for food and all that stuff. But then throughout the year, you're also paying for equipment. You're signing up for teams. You're paying for travel. Like on any given AAU tournament weekend. So I used to play AAU basketball. We have to travel to, say, Reading, Pennsylvania. So there's a 3-hour drive. So you got gas and food. Usually you're bringing along the family,
and
right?
Hotels.
So and the hotel. So I got my two brothers with me, my mom and dad.
Flight
hotel,
yeah.
Food. A lot of the better teams are traveling across the country. So you're buying flights. It adds up. And that's why a lot of the top flight AAU teams. Guess who has sponsors? So right. Under Armour, Adidas, Nike, they're all developing these feeder programs. So how do you think that Kevin Durant right now has his sponsorship with Nike?
Right.
He was sponsored with Nike when he was in eighth grade.
Wow.
So these big corporations are seeing the money in it too. So they're getting these athletes early.
I got to find out how Under Armour is going to sponsor my little Jay Park in eighth grade.
We'll emphasize the word little.
The thing is, in the sports are all there. Like football and basketball are not like, I don't know, were you a champion in ping pong?
I think, this adds to another element of discussion here, which is a side comment, but like esports later on. But for me, I'm just kind of amazed by this new world because I could see the Asian fanatic craze of just pouring in expendable income on academic supplements.
Right.
But sports, like to that degree, I didn't realize.
And
that's a lot of money.
Too, you know, you're also thinking about you're investing your time. So my dad, right, he was a coach for a lot of my teams growing up, and he would have to take off work. So you're thinking also the cost, you know, the cost benefit. He would have to take off work to go spend money to watch me play basketball for a scholarship that I didn't get, you know. So the cost, it certainly adds up. I think the majority of it is that whenever you play over the summer, you're traveling nonstop. So you're constantly taking off work. You're living in and out of hotels. You're buying fast food all the time. And it's just like a couple hundred bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there over the course of, you know, when did Maya start playing sports?
Yeah. Four or five,
all the way up to college.
I was doing the math in my head actually, because so our younger daughter did get a club offer, recruitment offer, and I was just in my head, I was bewildered because I remember club sports and I remember club soccer, and from back when I was playing sports, it was, you know, I played basketball, baseball, soccer, multiple sports, but then this has now become like a year round thing, costs a couple grand, you know, and then you got to travel for these tournaments, and so I was just kind of doing the rough swag, and 40 grand, 50 grand. It kind of just adds up if you do it in the longevity of a child's youth, you know?
You know, I'll do an example. So my soccer team growing up in eighth grade, we went down, we were invited to an invitation on Disney World. I mean, it was just me and my mom. There goes a few grand, right? And it was a huge tournament. A lot of guys started getting recruited as early as eighth grade there. But I mean, are you going to see the return on that investment?
I think the thing is, if you look at it strictly, like from a parent perspective, if I look at it, as I want to get my son or daughter a scholarship, right? I also look at it as life experiences,
yes,
and life moments, going to Disney World with your mother, yeah, and kind of just having that memory in your bank. That's kind of priceless, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we joke about trying to see if our kids are going to be athletes or get a scholarship or this and that, but I mean, I know we have genetics working against us and things like that. So I just kind of look for moments. I want that's why I'm glad I talked to you, Jenny, about that. I want soccer to still be fun for her,
yeah,
and other sports, volleyball, baseball, basketball, softball, things like that, to kind of come into. Who knows if soccer's her only sport? If that's all she likes, she might like a variety of things.
Absolutely.
You know?
And that's what I think, that if you're a parent listening to this and you have an athlete who might have the talent or the physique to one day get recruited, the absolute worst thing you can do is send them the message that they are playing to get a scholarship, because then they have this sort of mercenary attitude towards it, and all this pressure, and like, these kids will hate soccer, you know, and the last thing you want to do is like for Maya to just be like, I don't want to go to soccer today. You want it to be fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So what kind of sports do colleges look for? You know, like what kind of athletes, or not necessarily athletes, but, you know, every college has different types of sports available to them. Are they always looking for the same sports? So how does that really work?
Yeah. So, I'm definitely not the expert on this, but I do remember from past experience, and I know there's like 26 or 25 main sports that the NC2A kind of manages or helps foster. And there's a variety of colleges and universities. And this varies by region. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I went to Hopkins, there was only one D sport there. Mm-hmm. It was lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was there, they were only offering male scholarships, male lacrosse scholarships at the time, but it kind of transitioned, and I think they started offering female lacrosse scholarships also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I was having a conversation with Travis, and he was talking about the water sports on the West Coast. It's very regional in nature, you know, north, south, east, west, and the sports that they offer, you know, vary depending on what they're looking for. I know water sports are probably not as big on the East Coast as opposed to like California universities and colleges. And I always wondered that because I'm such a homer from California, and I grew up, you know, Southern California, born and raised. And I know UCLA has a tremendous amount of NC2A championships, and so does Stanford, so does USC. And I was wondered, even in my youth, I wondered if folks on the East Coast, like in Boston or Florida, if they cared that we have like 100 national championships, or all people care about is football, baseball, basketball, and the main team sports, you know, ice hockey, things like that.
It's definitely like by region. So in the South, like they couldn't care any less about volume. You win football, you might as well have won every one of them, right? You know, in the Northeast, if you win basketball, might as well have won all of them. Wow. You know, like they'll look at UCLA or Stanford or whoever won the water polo this year, and they'll be like, oh, that's adorable. They play water polo, you know, but then UCLA will probably look at, you know, Maryland winning the lacrosse national championships, and they'll be like, what is this sport with sticks, and what are they doing?
Are they playing Quidditch?
I feel like in California, at least Stanford, UCLA, USC, and a lot of the California schools is volume-based. Like they want to rack up those trophies.
And the Pac-12.
They
want
that. I remember going on UCLA's campus and I saw that trophy case. They just displayed, like, look at us.
Yeah.
It's called the Conference of Champions for a reason. Yeah. They literally win everything. Yeah. Pac-12 is unbelievable. Right.
But that's
Thank you.
No, but in the South, you win football, you win everything, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Because that is the dominant sport.
Yeah.
So I have some students that are talking about sports in the sense like taekwondo, individual sports, and I'm sure we'll get into that. Archery is something that's pretty big that I've noticed, especially I think in like April or whatnot, they go to some mid-state and they do a big championship there. I'm wondering from, I guess, again, a parent's point of view, do I first identify that my son and daughter is good at this particular sport, then go online to search like Division I, Division II, Division III for this sport? Do I start with the school first itself, like Stanford, what are their sports that they're good at? And then I guess we'll target our son or daughter to like that particular sport. What do you see is the most common way that parents go about this?
Oh, the most common way?
Yeah.
Here's the easiest sport to get a scholarship. You're going to go play that.
Oh.
You know, 'cause parents force their kids. You know, like right now, I guarantee you we're going to see a boom in girls' beach volleyball players. Because beach volleyball just became a college sport.
I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah. So we're having, you know, we went from 0 to 90 schools with beach volleyball programs with 12 scholarships per school. Mm. So whatever 12 times 90 is, there's that many more scholarships available.
So there's like a supply and demand aspect to
right.
that
so
as well.
Right, so you look at girls lacrosse has boomed recently with, you know, we had girls from my team. I think we had like 14 girls from my lacrosse team my senior year get D1 scholarships, and half of them didn't even play just because they played lacrosse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like a lot of parents will look at their kids as free, you know, they'll be like, what's the easiest free ticket to education? Which I think is backwards. Mm-hmm. I think you should say, oh, here are the sports that you like and that you're good at. if you want to keep doing it, here's what you should do. Right. If you don't, please study. Academics always come first.
With college tuition at the rate that it's growing at and where it's at, there's a pragmatism to it too.
Right.
You know, they're like, if I'm going to invest this kind of money in a club sport or in high school or in equipment, I'm kind of selfishly looking for a little bit of a payoff.
Right.
So there's that there's that element in there too.
So like, I mean, if you're a parent of a 5'10" sort of fast white point guard who can't jump that high.
Is this you?
He's probably Well, you're talking about me or Jason or, you know, 99% of white basketball dreamers in the country. You're probably not going to go to Michigan or Maryland and get a D1 scholarship. It's just the way it is. It's like you shouldn't force your kid to try to get a scholarship out of it because you're going to ruin everything that's beautiful about sports and miss out on those life lessons. And the best part, I think, that you learn about sports is just to do something that you love and get better at it because you want to do it.
Yeah.
There's one thing. So, Jay, your question was interesting to me because there are some sports and individual and team sports that are Olympic sports.
Yep.
You know, and there's also that Olympic angle. I know Junior there's some Olympics. Applications where I've seen some essays where their timing is very important, right? Whatever the sport is, rowing or whatever it is, but the time is important. It's like almost at an Olympic level or junior Olympic level.
And they go
through that junior Olympic circuit kind of thing.
Yep.
Whereas the colleges might not have a scholarship or a D1 sport or something available for that individual sport, but it does help. Or it's advantageous to your application in general.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you have that kind of angle that you're putting on paper.
Yeah, I mean, that comes back to what Jay was saying in the beginning of how, you know, he noticed that students who are doing sports tend to have a little bit of a better chance of getting into a top 10, top 20 university. And I think that comes down to individual sports, too. I mean, team sports are really great when it comes to recruitment. If UCLA doesn't have archery, an archery team, like, but they are nationally ranked in terms of archery, they're going to cultivate that and help you in terms of, you know, making sure that you can get to the Olympics, because what better is it than UCLA saying, hey, we have an Olympic athlete coming to our school, right? So there is an upside to, you know, even if the school college doesn't necessarily have the team, that if you go to the Olympic circuit route, it would still be beneficial for both the student and the school.
Actually, I have an example of that. The example of that is Sally. She got into Harvard and she did a very unique sport. It was, I'm not even sure if you want to call it a sport. It's probably like sport/art to me. It's synchronized swimming. And I remember she wrote in her essay. She was like
a sport.
Yeah. It's a national. She won like a national title for it.
I'll give it a sport too.
Yeah, it's an Olympic sport.
Yeah. Olympic sport, right?
But then again, you
comes up as a sport.
Baseball's not in the Olympics.
But baseball's a sport because they have teams.
Right, the Olympics isn't the only determining
factor. Yeah, the Olympics isn't the only determining factor, Punkage.
Okay. All right.
But then she ended up writing an essay. I remember helping her write it about how she really had a dream to bring synchronized swimming to Harvard. Like, I want to start like an association or a club or something like that. And I thought that was a really good selling point, I suppose, for the student.
I remember that.
Yeah. Just a side comment. I know that esports is on the rise.
That was the second time you mentioned that.
You love your esports.
It's scholarships. It's
so
like
we're gonna move on because we don't have too much time. So how are the programs divided in colleges? So obviously there's D1, D2, and D3. What are some important things that high school students should know about these programs?
So Division I programs are the ones that pretty much most people who have turned on ESPN will have seen. You know, they're the UCLA's, University of Maryland. All the bigger schools, so Division I schools can offer you what's called a full scholarship. So that's where you get room, you get board, you get tuition, everything is paid for. And now I believe that you will also get a stipend to help you pay for food and just basic day-to-day expenses. Division II, you can get what's called a partial scholarship. So this is where the football team will get, say, $20,000 to divvy up between 50 athletes. So Punkage, if you're a star quarterback, you're getting $5,000 over the course of 4 years. And Jay, you're kind of the backup running back. So you're only getting $500. So D2s can divvy it up like that. Mm-hmm. They can sort of make their budget work to athletes, which in my opinion is the best system out there.
It's kind of a good system, yeah.
And then Division III's, they cannot give out athletic scholarships. But what a lot of schools do, and this is where academics always, always, always number one. Mm-hmm. My little brother he played golf at a D3 school. And he was sort of funneled academic scholarships, even though they were definitely athletics. Mm-hmm. He got academic scholarships because he was good enough at golf, and he was also good enough academically where it didn't raise any red flags. Mm-hmm. So I think number one, the best chance for you getting a scholarship is definitely your academics. Mm-hmm. A coach will not recruit you, and he cannot recruit you if you can't get in. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of coaches get in trouble for trying to do this stuff, but you need to get your academics in line. It's mm-hmm. always, always, always number one.
Yep. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit in a minute. So a lot of students ask me, you know, they have dreams of becoming a D1 athlete, right? And they're like, how do I know if I'm good enough, right? How do I know if I'm good enough to go play at a D1 school? And the first thing I always tell these students is to be realistic. You have to be realistic about your competition and your competitive level. Are you playing AAU basketball? Are you playing Premier League or national level for soccer? You know, for club soccer, it goes from bronze, silver, silver elite, gold, and premier. And premier is usually where, you know, the top tier soccer players are, or they're playing at on a national level team. And so are you playing at that level? Are you a starter in your high school varsity soccer team? Or are you a bench, you know, or do you sit on
bench
the bench?
Warmer.
Are you a bench warmer? You know, are you, if is your swim time within the top 10 ranked nationally or statewide? You know, how do you rank in comparison to other people if you are an individual athlete? So these are all questions that you need to ask. And I think the other way that you can know is if you go to like a summer camp, if you go to a Yale soccer summer camp, you'll see other players there that are trying to get recruited to come to Yale. And you can tell at that time, am I good enough? Like in comparison to this person who is definitely going to get recruited probably, how do I compare to this person? So being realistic is really important. And I'm not trying to shatter people's dreams and say, hey, if you're a bench warmer right now as a sophomore, junior, and on your soccer team, you don't have a chance of getting recruited. But reality is, it's very, you have to be at that top level performing. As Travis mentioned earlier, people are getting recruited as an eighth grader. So if you're not, you know, competing at that level athletically, you're not playing varsity sports as a freshman, getting recruited to a D1 school is going to be very, very tough. Any other kind of like side comments about that?
I think parents, you need to also recognize if your child is good enough. One of the worst things I can see, and we're seeing this with LeVar Ball with his three kids, just blowing so much smoke up their butts over how good they are. And they're exceptional athletes. But, you know, parents, what I've seen is they think, you know, their little 5'7" point guard is going to go play in the NBA. And they're telling their kid that they're this good and they're that good. And that the only reason that they're not starting and playing every minute is because it's the coach's fault. You got to let your kid, one, take accountability for himself, but you need to be realistic with them as well. Like you can't say, oh, you're definitely good enough for a D1 scholarship. It's the coach's fault you're not playing. You need to sort of reinforce what they need to do to get better. Because, if you're telling the kid that he's good enough and he's not, and they're not working to improve on their deficiencies, he'll never be good enough. Mm-hmm. So you need to be real with them as well.
Just on a side prediction note, since we are at NBA draft season, and I am hoping that the Lakers get Lonzo Ball. I don't like the father. I mean, he says some things that are a little like
you're too good of a dad to like that guy.
But yeah, you know. But I, being a Laker fan, I hope Lonzo pans out. If they do draft him, there's still a big if there. But what do you think of his talent?
Oh, he's so good. I think he's unbelievable. Is he worth $1 billion? His dad's saying he is. Probably not. Yeah.
All right,
we'll see how that happens. We'll see what happens in a few years.
So moving into athletic recruitment and college admissions, I feel like a lot of students ask me this question, like, how does recruitment work alongside college admissions? So giving a little bit of insight into college admissions, first of all, some schools have folders dedicated to athletes with a big red A in on top of their folder. At Hopkins, the folders are color-coded. And so an athlete's color folder could be red versus like a musician could be yellow, for example. So the athletic department is in constant communication with the admissions office. If they are a D1 school, especially, the athletic department will have a pretty big say in the admissions process for students. So the athletic department will discuss eligibility with the admissions office. They'll review blue chip athletes. Blue chip athletes are top athletes that you cannot miss as a recruiter, that you just know. If their name comes up in a file, you're like, wow, they're applying here. We need to really consider this person. They use their academic standards and requirements of the university. Travis has mentioned multiple times that academics are going to come down to be the most important and deciding factor. So when it comes to even D1 athletes, if you're not a blue chip athlete and you're a student who has just as much potential as another student, but you have a higher GPA or a higher overall, you know, rigor in terms of your curriculum that you took in high school, you probably have a higher chance of getting admitted than that other student if there was only one space or spot left. Coaches can appeal the admissions decision, but with approval from the athletic director and athletic liaison. So this also is a D1 school type thing. But the director of admissions makes the final decision. If the athletic director comes into the admissions room and says, hey, you know what, this is a blue chip athlete, he's about to make us $1 billion. Then the admissions director is most likely going to be like, okay, we're going to most likely take this person. So So when it comes to D3 schools, however, college admissions, I mean, athletic directors do not have as much of a say in the college admissions process. So even if they really, really wanted you, if your grades are not up to par for that school, let's use Wellesley College, for example. Wellesley is a D3 school. And, you know, maybe you're an amazing soccer player, but if your grades are not that great, then, you know, even if you're an amazing soccer player, they're not going to have that much say in your admissions, essentially. And that's kind of how athletic departments work alongside admissions.
You probably have to have a bare minimum for some of these colleges, right? Like have a SAT score or a GPA to get you in. I only say that because I hear stories of this amazing blue chip athlete but didn't have the grades or something to get into name your Michigan or USC or something like that, you know?
Yep. And that reminds me of Jeremy Lin and Harvard, and kind of like his experiences and how, when I was watching his documentary, he talked about how like academics was still his number one priority. And part of getting into Harvard was that his level of academics was so high, but his basketball kind of experience, I mean, his ability to play basketball was also just as high, and that's what got him in. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that parents should also consider. Academics are definitely important. So what do I have to prepare and when do I have to prepare? So student athletes, if you are interested in getting recruited for D1 or D2, you have to register with the NCAA Eligibility Center, which is www.eligibilitycenter.org. Student athletes, you have to complete an amateurism question, kind of like a questionnaire, and pay the registration fee during your junior year, which then qualifies you to be an NCAA athlete. Test scores and transcripts must be sent directly from the testing agency to the NCAA Eligibility Center for them to also see that you are eligible to be an NCAA student athlete. So just a couple of tips that you need to be aware of. You need to do this by your junior year, but go ahead and go on to the eligibilitycenter.org. There's a ton of information about what makes you eligible, what test scores you need, what types of things that you need to be on the lookout for in order to be eligible for NCAA athlete. Drawbacks to selective D1 programs. So I always have students talk to me about how they're like, you know, I know that I can get to a D1 school if I really wanted to, but I'm a little bit worried. You know, I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to do well academically. Maybe I should just go to a D2 school or D3 school and just have fun and still be able to play. It's not like I'm going to be a professional basketball player, right? And so they talk to me about that. And I think that's a real thing to really consider. And I think parents should also have this conversation with students as well. You know, the student might not be ready to deal with the pressures of college sports. And I mean, maybe Travis can speak to this a little bit more, but college athletes have a lot to deal with, right? You know, not only do they have to go to practice and wake up early, they have summer camps and then they practice after that. They have on season and off season. They have to make sure their academics and GPA are at, you know, a certain level. They have media that they need to be aware of. You know, they have interviews or things like that they need to be aware of. So they might not be ready for that as a student, and you might want to have that conversation with them.
Yeah, I mean, as a Division I athlete, you'll have a ton of obligations, at least during season, and a lot of times out of season too. I mean, so you'll have practice, you're constantly missing class, always missing class either due to practice or games or traveling or because coach said you had to come to practice again at midnight or whatever. But I will say that you at least have a lot of resources at your disposal. So most Division I schools, I know that one of my friends at Maryland, she was a tutor for athletes.
Yep.
And the amount of resources that they have academically is pretty tremendous for the most part. If it's a decent Division I school, you'll get a lot of help. And if you go to North Carolina, you might even get a fake class or two.
Yeah. Oh dear. Oh dear. Do you guys know
Sorry,
about that?
ACC rivalry.
They're all like, what? So North Carolina, not just North Carolina, but other colleges have created fake majors for their athletes so that they are like fulfilling fake requirements so that they're getting the GPA eligibility to play their sport. Wow. And they got caught, you know, colleges got caught for doing that.
Welcome to big time athletics.
Welcome to D1 schools, everyone. One. Yeah.
So you will get plenty of legal help as well. But yeah, I mean, it is something to weigh. And in a lot of cases too, like say you're a star quarterback, you also are a celebrity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jimmer Fredette, I don't know if any of you guys, if that name is familiar, but he had to take all online classes at BYU because he couldn't walk across campus.
Yeah.
He just got mobbed all the time. Yeah. So that is, I mean, I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast is quite that level, but I mean, that's just something that happens.
Yeah. And same thing at UCLA, you know,
you were like that too? Oh. A mob of students came to you?
I actually couldn't go to UCLA. I had to stay in the dorm room and just stay inside. No. Like when we see really awesome, you know, our football quarterback or our basketball team, we're just like in awe and we're like, I have history class with that guy, you know, and it's definitely have the celebrity status. D1 programs also tend to make more promises of admission and scholarship sometimes that cannot be fulfilled. And so when Travis said that, you know, they might talk to you as eighth grader and they're like, okay, we're going to get you a Ferrari one day. And it's not official and there's no paperwork. They don't have to give that to you. That's just their way of maybe giving you a little bit of a candy or something, you know, just to get you interested.
It's the classic bait and switch.
Exactly.
And it happens all the time. I mean, we'll see all this stuff. So you'll hear the term offer all the time, right? This guy's got offers from here. Well, you can't actually physically offer anyone until they're seniors.
Right.
So when you hear that someone has an offer from, you know, USC in ninth grade, you know, that means no more than me telling you, Punky, I'll give you $1 million tomorrow, right? It can go up and smoke.
Exactly.
It can go up and smoke that fast. So you can't physically sign anything or be offered anything until you are a senior. Mm-hmm. So that's important to remember.
Please remember that. And then also stress can often disrupt the high school senior year experience. So if you're a parent and you're helping your child become a student athlete, you just want to be aware of their senior year experience. Just some other general drawbacks. Selective colleges are becoming more selective, even in the athletic realm and the athletic world. The competition for blue chip athletes are sometimes, you know, create pressure for admissions to accept academically weak students. So like that happens at UCLA sometimes, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but I do have a friend that went to UCLA for a football scholarship and he had a really low GPA and he had to make up summer classes just to be eligible to get to UCLA. So I feel like colleges have this kind of pressure. Admissions has pressure sometimes to accept academically weak students because they have a Kevin Durant coming. And then strong programs may mean less initial playing time. If you're a student who is used to playing so much in high school, it's very possible that you go to a D1 school and you're benched the entire time that you are there. So just keep that in mind. I know we didn't hit red flag students. I mean, red flag athletes.
Redshirt
athletes. Sorry, we didn't hit redshirt athletes. But basically, that's like taking a fifth year. You can, you know, graduate in 5 years instead of four, and then you get an extra year of playing. So redshirt athletes or something like that as well. Anyway, so to wrap up, I know this was a little bit of a long podcast, but we had so much to talk about, and Travis was so excited about this podcast.
That's good. Learned a lot.
So let's just go around and do our final advice in terms of what you would give to a student athlete or parent right now.
So my laptop just restarted by itself. I had my notes ready for my final advice. I think I'm just going to have to paraphrase. My point would be, you know, this is a whole new field for me. I've learned to realize, and then also scientific studies come out that if your physicality is correlates to your mental acuity, that if you do consistent routine exercise, you are sharper, you're more capable, and it affects your academics in a positive way. I think especially for the Asian kind of minority here, or the Asian parents that want to focus just on academics, just realize that sports is, the concern here is the time commitment to do sports and being tired and being unable to do homework once you get home from practice. But I think that we need to start paying more attention to encouraging sports, especially in Asian Americans, for that wholesome balance, and also for just that sense of developing teamwork, for developing discipline. I think you get a lot of positive values from pursuing a sport, and I want to encourage more families, especially Asian American families that are so dead set on going to Harvard with academics, to start thinking about the sports aspect, because as parents, you need to know that showing balance, especially with a sport and academics combined, can be the better way, the high road to getting into a better school.
Yeah, my advice is very similar. It's life lessons. I mean, I didn't like sports because I was a super athlete or I knew I could be a pro. I mean, even though I'd love to do that, mm-hmm. It was really just the interconnections with people trying to work on a common goal and trying to just, you know, overcome challenges and overcome mm-hmm. hurdles. I can translate a lot of the things I learned. I'm seeing in my kids too that are playing team sports now, and are working through their problems of just non-sport stuff, school stuff, and overcoming things. And so there's a lot of translational stuff, and I think, Jay, you hit it. You know, the balance is key. It's a wholesome, nurturing thing, and you know, just have fun with it, because like, you don't get that at age. Now I'm in my 40s. I mean, sports is kind of winding down. My body is getting old, man.
No.
Back problems and whatnot.
My biggest thing would be more for the parents, because I mean, most of the recruitment process, it does not stem from the kids. This stems from the parents and their parents forcing their kids to play basketball year-round to the point that they hate it. If you see that your kid has a passion for a sport, whether I don't care if it's esports, you know, it could be lacrosse or esports or volleyball, or whatever. Even if they're, you know, you don't think that they could be pro or get a scholarship, you know, the chances of them being pro anyway are minuscule at best. So you just want sports to be, like Jay and Punky kind of hit on, a vehicle for life lessons. Mm-hmm. I'll say that I learned more on fields and courts and whatnot than I ever did in a classroom. Mm-hmm. That's a guarantee. So, and I did that because I enjoyed the sports I was playing. I wasn't out there being like, okay, well, if I have 4 goals today, if I score 42 points, I might get a look from Maryland, you know, which will probably go up in smoke. So you just want your kids to enjoy sports. It's one of the most important things that, you know, that I had growing up.
And if they love a sport, parents, try not to push them to quit. I feel like a lot of parents are like, well, they're not getting the straight A's, they're getting 1 B, they're gonna have to quit soccer. And I'm like, but that 1 B and then being able to play varsity soccer is pretty unique for, you know, an Asian American student. So consider that, you know, if they love something, try to teach them how to balance that rather than, you know, just having to quit something that they love, or else they're going to grow up learning that, oh, well, if I'm good at something, but it's not working out, I should just quit. And it kind of develops a really negative cycle and mentality in some of the students.
And along that same vein too, and that, you know, we're all lifelong learners, right? But, you know, as Punky said, we're running out of time as athletes. You know, yeah. You can only play sports for so many
that's
years.
So true.
You know, when you're in high school, that's probably your last chance to compete at a pretty high level, you know, unless you do get recruited. So I think if their grades aren't terrible, if they're pretty good, like Jen said, it'll add to their resume. It'll get them that kind of teamwork or leadership. It's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely worth it.
I agree. And just make sure you're aware of eligibility rules. Go on unofficial campus visits. You can go on official campus visits, you know, when you're a junior, I mean, when you're a senior. But you can go on unofficial campus visits like summer camps and things like that. And be aware of campus life and academic factors that should factor into your overall admissions, overall wanting to get recruited to that specific college. Okay, so thank you so much for listening to season 2, episode 5. Tune in next week for our season 2, episode 6, where we're going to talk about accelerated programs. Nice. If you missed any of our episodes, you can find it on iTunes or www.thehallpasspodcast.com. Again, we would love for you to send us an email of general topics and questions you might want us to cover in our podcast at
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com.
All right, until next time, see y'all later.
Later. See ya.